And welcome back. I'm Brian, your host, and welcome to the Daily Buddhism Podcast for May 23rd, 2008. Please check out the website at www.dailybuddhism.com and sign up for the Daily Buddhism email list on the top right-hand corner of the screen. Subscribers to the list get content not available in the podcast, such as last week's discussion on the three poisons and some of the worst Buddhist jokes of the past 2,500 years. Sign up. It's free and easy to do. I don't have too much to report this week in the way of announcements, but I have changed the dailybuddhism.com blog to allow comments without registration. So now you can make anonymous comments and posts without registering, putting in your name or anything like that. So I'll be watching closely and deleting spam and inappropriate posts. But if you've been holding back from asking questions or making comments out of embarrassment or fear of sounding stupid, fear no longer and post your comments right there on the blog. I'll answer them. Hopefully maybe other people can answer them also and get some discussions going. DailyBuddhism.com. Okay, let's see what else. The companion podcast, Tao of the Day, is now available on iTunes. Just go to the podcast section and search for Tao, spelled T-A-O. If you don't use iTunes, go to www.taoofthedaycom and listen right there on the page or download the MP3 files manually. They're very short. Most of them are under a minute, so it's worth listening to. Also, I have changed the lesson plan a little bit for this week. I was planning on covering all the major branches of Buddhism this week, including Zen, on Friday. I've since decided that I'm going to boost Zen up to a full week's long lesson. And that's where I'm coming from with my background, and I know more about that group than any of the others. I've also had several requests from listeners and readers for more information about Zen and concepts like koans, lineage, and so forth. I can't really do a good job covering all that in a single day, so that's going to be the entire next week's project. But just to get you warmed up, this week's lesson will be about all the other major schools of Buddhism, so let's get started. Part 1. Denominations of Buddhism, Theravada and Mahayana. Theravada Buddhism is the oldest form of Buddhism and is probably the closest to the original core teachings of Buddha. Most of the other schools have added significant new elements and material to Buddhism, but Theravada is as close to plain vanilla Buddhism as possible. Other groups have added gods, rituals, mysticism, many practices that were not in place when Buddha taught his teachings. Theravada Buddhism explains that your enlightenment will come from your experience coupled along with your critical thinking and reasoning skills. It's all very mental. By the strictest ideals of Theravada teachings, it's unlikely that lay people, like you or me, can reach enlightenment on their own. Monks, living off in the mountains and the monasteries, are far more likely to reach enlightenment. Generally, the role of laymen is to feed and support the monks, while the monks meditate and work toward their own enlightenment. Good lay people who do their duty in this lifetime by supporting the monks may get lucky and become a monk in a future lifetime. I'm oversimplifying this a little bit, but if you don't want to become a monk in a monastery in this lifetime, Theravada may not be for you. Theravada Buddhism is often called Hinayana, the small vehicle Buddhism. This is in contrast to Mahayana Buddhism, which is the great vehicle. In some ways, those are good words because the great vehicle, Mahayana, has many more people than Theravada, so Theravada really is much smaller. But the word Hinayana is somewhat derogatory, so it's almost insulting. It's not really the best term. Theravada is really the way to what you should call it. But there are far fewer Theravada Buddhists than Mahayanists, and all the rest of the flavors of Buddhism we're going to discuss fall under the same main category of Mahayana. So Theravada is its own little thing off to the side. Mahayana is the big group with many little subgroups in it. So Mahayana Buddhism is a blanket term for most other non-Theravada forms of Buddhism. And by far the majority of the world's Buddhists fall into this category. their general beliefs generally include the idea that anyone, not just monks, can become Buddhas. We all have a little bit of Buddha inside us. Some of the schools of Mahayana that we'll be discussing are Pure Land, Tibetan, Tantric Buddhism, and Zen. And there are many, many other sub-schools of Buddhism, but these are the main forms and the ones we're going to cover here. Pure Land Buddhism. Before we get into the belief system of Pure Land Buddhism, we need to introduce a new character into the story. Amida Buddha, also called Amitabha, was a monk who attained enlightenment a long time ago. This is probably a good time to point out that every time you hear the word Buddha, we're not necessarily talking about the original Buddha. There have been many people who have attained enlightenment, and many of them go by the name of some form of Buddha. We're going to encounter many Buddhas as we move forward. But anyway, this one, Amida Buddha, reached enlightenment and shortly thereafter set up a place called Pure Land, somewhere in the West, far beyond our own world. The Pure Land was a perfect place and impossible to reach here on Earth. Practitioners who call upon the name of Amida Buddha, maybe even as few as 10 times in their life, can be reborn in the Pure Land after they die. Upon being reborn in the Pure Land, they receive further instruction and may return to our world as a bodhisattva. A bodhisattva is a person who has attained enlightenment, but rather than end the cycle of rebirth and move on to whatever comes after, has chosen to stay here in this world in order to help others learn the truth and become enlightened. It's the ultimate sacrifice. They give up their own nirvana to help others. It's also believed that attaining enlightenment on one's own is extremely difficult, maybe almost impossible, and that it's much easier to reach with the help of Amida Buddha. Instead of meditation, adherents to Pure Land believe that Amida Buddha will lead them to the Pure Land where they will automatically gain enlightenment. Another practice of Pure Land people is to repeat or chant the Nembutsu, Namu Amida Butsu, or I trust in the Buddha of immeasurable light. This is repeated over and over, sometimes hundreds of times, and is intended to bestow Amida Buddha's blessing on the chanter. Now, does some of this sound familiar? There's a Messiah has come, and if you call upon his name, you'll be reborn in heaven. You might not be able to be saved without his help. Yes, Pure Land is often derogatorily called Christian Buddhism, due to the similarities between this form of Buddhism and Christianity. This form of Buddhism is growing very quickly around the world, probably due to the simplicity of their doctrine. Do the chants, have faith in Amida Buddha, and you're all set. No tricky meditation, and nowhere near as many rules. It's much simpler. So it's very popular. Most of what we discuss here on the Daily Buddhism does not really apply to this group. I'm once again oversimplifying, but if it doesn't seem like this stuff fits in with the rest of Buddhism, then I think we're on the same page. The next form of Buddhism we're going to get into is sometimes called Vajrayana or Tantric Buddhism. And I'll be honest here, I don't know that much about this group. Most of the material in this section I've taken straight from Wikipedia. But I do know Vajrayana is a lot more mystic than most of the other groups, but I have no real experience with it. Tantric Buddhism is also known as Vajrayana Buddhism, as well as some other names such as Mantrayana and the Diamond Vehicle. Vajrayana is sometimes considered a third major form of Buddhism, alongside Theravada and Mahayana. Some scholars consider it a subschool of Mahayana. That's not really too important, so we're not going to debate that here. But the most distinguishing thing about Tantric Buddhism is the use of tantras. What is a tantra? I'm going to read the Wikipedia explanation here. Rather than a single coherent system, tantra is an accumulation of practices and ideas which has among its characteristics the use of ritual, energy work, the use of the mundane to access the supramundane and the identification of the microcosm with the macrocosm. The tantric practitioner seeks to use the divine power that flows through the universe, including their own body, to attain purposeful goals. And these goals may be spiritual, material, or both. A practitioner of Tantra considers mystical experience or the guidance of a guru imperative. In the process of working with energy, the tantric has various tools at their disposal. These include yoga, to actuate processes that will yoke the practitioner to the divine. Also important are the use of visualizations of the deity and verbalization or evocation through mantras, which may be construed as seeing and seeing the power into being. Identification and internalization of the divine is enacted, often through a total identification with deity, such that the aspirant becomes the deity, the Ishta Devata. Okay. To put it more simply, Vajrayana is the group that is heavily into mantras and yoga, is heavily influenced by Hinduism, more so even than the other forms of Buddhism. There are many gods and deities, as well as rituals and gurus. The teachers of Vajrayana are often called gurus, and the teachings are passed down from a teacher to a student is called the lineage. A lineage tradition can often be traced back through a line of teachers to see which traditions are observed. We'll get into the details of lineage a bit more thoroughly when we talk about Zen, but I wanted to introduce the idea here since it applies to Vajrayana as well. And lastly for today, we'll talk about Tibetan Buddhism. We've talked about Tibetan Buddhism a little while ago, a few weeks back, so if you don't remember all the details of that, go back to the podcast episode 4 on Tibet for a quick review. I'm not going to explain the Dalai Lama or the Tibetan occupation again today, but these concepts are very important to Tibetan Buddhism. So if you're a new subscriber or a new listener, go back to dailybuddhism.com and listen to podcast episode 4 for all that material. For the most part, Tibetan Buddhism was limited to Tibet and the surrounding regions until the occupation of Tibet by China in 1950. Tibetan Buddhists were forced into exile, and their beliefs quickly spread outward to the rest of the world. And now it's quickly becoming increasingly popular in Europe and America. It may be the fastest growing form of Buddhism in the world. Tibetan Buddhism uses tantras, much like Vajrayana's, and they break Buddhist practices into four successively more difficult steps. The steps work on the individual's personal ego, the spiritual self, and personal truth. And there are two major sub-schools of Tibetan, known commonly as Red Hat and Yellow Hat schools. So when you see pictures of Buddhist monks in the big fancy red or yellow hats, you can be pretty sure that those are Tibetan monks. The specific differences between the two are mostly due to different lineages, which we discussed a little bit yesterday and also some more next week. But the actual teachings between Red and Yellow Hat are not that important as far as we're concerned. Tibetan is one of the more popular forms of Buddhism in the West, and several well-known celebrities follow the Tibetan way, including Richard Gere, Steven Seagal, Jet Li, and Allen Ginsberg. So it's one of the more popular ones in America. And those are the main ones. The next big flavor of Buddhism is Zen. And like I said, that's the one I know most about, and that's what we're probably going to talk most about here in the Daily Buddhism. So next week, we're going to get into the various aspects of Zen. But until next week, see you then. Or, considering the subject matter, see you Zen.